Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. That's the main man. To your left, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm Buck Rising. Happy to be back with you for week four of the NFL season. A couple teams got off the schneid this week, Greg, including the Tennessee Titans, but so did their next opponent, their first divisional Colts.
Yeah, that was probably a game. I imagine many probably believed that the Titans might win a ball game this past weekend. I don't think many thought the Colts would win a ball game, but, you know, as they say, Buck, and this is really deeply profound, that's why they play them.
No, it's absolutely so. Who would have thought at the start of the season that the Jags would run over the Chargers the way that they did? But certainly that's what makes the NFL a lot of fun. The Titans, though, Greg, you know, they looked more like themselves, certainly in the first half. They had a good plan, three straight touchdown drives, Derrick Henry being effective, the offensive line in front of him being effective. I guess we'll talk about the second half and the thing that people are caught up on, but from right. What you saw from that offense in the first half that led them to 24 points, what'd you make of it?
Yeah, and you know, it's always tough because when plays work, people automatically assume that the game plan is good. And when plays don't work, people assume the game plan is poor. And I'm not trying to be funny or sarcastic. That's just the way I think the world works in sports, in any sport, obviously. You know, look, I thought early on, I thought they had some good runs. Henry had a 10-yard run on the first possession. I thought it was actually a really well-designed little wrinkle to a basic play. I mean, it was a counter play. But they did something on that particular play with Swaim, the tight end, shifting to what would become the play side. And when he shifts, what that does is it widens the defensive end. And what that does when you run a counter is the puller then has more time and a better angle on his kickout block. So little things like that are just wrinkles that allow a basic play, which they run. You know, they're a predominant zone team, but this was a counter play. You know, so you take a counter play that everybody has in their playbook and you add a wrinkle. And it's a good wrinkle because it allows for a cleaner block. Then they had, I thought, on the first possession, a really nice RPO concept with Robert Woods. And he caught a 16-yard ball on second and 12. It was off power run action. It was a nice play. It was well executed. They got the reaction they were looking for. So therefore, instead of handing it off, Tannehill threw the ball. So there were a lot of, you know, little wrinkles that I thought worked out well. The results were good. And didn't they scored touchdowns, I believe, on their first three possessions.
First three possessions. That's right.
Yeah. And the play that I probably really liked the most, because I think they need to do this, is the Woods 41-yarder. Now, that was not a first down play. That was second and five, but it's a normal down and distance play, Buck, as you know. They lined up, which they did a lot of in this game, in 12 personnel, meaning one back and two tight ends. And they got the Raiders in their base 5-2 personnel. Now, the Raiders did not always play base to 12, but on this particular play, they did. And they started off with a staple. They had outside run action to the boundary, and Tannehill kind of showed boot action. They do this a lot. This is part of their offense where it looks like Tannehill is going to boot, but he pulls up. So it's not really a boot, but to the defense, it kind of looks like that. And then they ran a two-man vertical concept. It was a post-cross concept. It's with max protection. They blocked with seven. Burks ran the post. Woods ran the deep cross or the over route, as some might call it. Really well-designed play off of a staple outside zone run, and it was a really good ball by Tannehill.
The going back to the counter plays, because, Greg, I've noticed them running a few more of them with both Hilliard and Henry. What does that kind of allow them to do when it comes to RPOs, specifically in the middle of the field? Because it felt like it created a few more opportunities for them. Just going.
Yeah, well, counters show run action really quickly, or anything that's what we call gap scheme, power counter, because you're pulling someone. And when you pull someone, that immediately looks like run. That's a run key for a second-level defender. Yeah. So they react more often than not. The goal is to get them to react to the run. So that's why a lot of teams will now use gap scheme run action even in their RPOs. When RPOs kind of first started, everybody used them with zone action. But now gap scheme action have become far more prevalent because that pulling lineman really says to a second-level defender as a key, as an indicator, boy, this is a run. So that's why I think you see more of it in the league and the RPO concepts now.
Okay. On the defensive side of the ball, Greg, you know, I think just to watch the game itself, people were very stressed at the end. Terrence Mitchell did not have an easy time against Mac Hollins, and notable enough that
Caleb. Well, that was on that one play, that 48-yarder. But, you know, I thought that, you know, I really made a study of the third downs because obviously they were 1-for-12. The Raiders were on third down, and the only conversion came on their first third down, which is when Hollins actually beat Mitchell one-on-one, but there was a reason for that. What they essentially did on third down, and this was out of the Belichickian school, is they played almost all man coverage concepts, but they doubled, bracketed, played over the top of both Adams and Waller, and let the other three defenders covering the other three receivers play pure man with no help. And it worked. They took out Adams. They took out Waller. And, you know, yes, did Hollins have a big game numbers-wise? Of course, the 60-plus yarder was against cover two. And actually, I thought Fulton played it about as well as you could possibly play it because he sunk tremendously. Normally in cover two, the corner will not sink with that much depth, but he played it great. It's just the throw beat him. But putting that play aside, that's the way they chose to play. Like I said, when you play defense, you can assign two defenders to two receivers. You can't assign two defenders to three receivers. You don't have enough bodies. But you can assign two defenders to two receivers, and that's what they did literally on every third down except the red zone, because the red zone, everything is different, particularly the low red zone from the 10-yard in. But they did that on all third downs. They took Adams and Waller out of the game. They were not factors in the game because Adams' long play was 18 yards, and that was a gimmick play. So, you know, it was really, really effective. And Mitchell, yes, did he get beat at the end? Did he get beat on the first third down that I mentioned on 3rd and 15? But for the most part, he didn't get beat. And nor did the other defenders who were matched up man-to-man, McCrary. Now, one could argue, if one's a cynic and a realist, I guess to some degree, that there were some plays that the Raiders clearly left on the field that might have changed the game. Clearly, there was a ball to Waller on a sail route that where he beat Byard that was, I guess, catchable, but just a tad overthrown. Who knows? It might have been a touchdown. Obviously, Waller dropped what could have been a touchdown on the Byard interception in the low red zone. But I thought Waller got a little anxious about DeMarcus Walker dropping back and sitting right there. Then there was one other play I can't remember that I thought was, you know, could have maybe not a game changer, but, you know, another positive. But for the
most
part,
they were productive the way that, you know, I think every Titans fan in the world feared that they would be, either Adams or Waller. And I think to your point that, you know, people get caught up in the Mac Hollins numbers when it's really about who didn't get the numbers in that.
Correct. Correct.
Allow Derek Carr to continue to move.
And the other thing that really stood out on film, which has stood out going back to last year, but in this game, I thought it really stood out even more. What we call TT stunts, tackle stunts, which they do in their dime, because in their dime, Autry comes inside.
Yep.
So Autry and Simmons are phenomenal at TT stunts. Autry is often the penetrator, meaning he goes first and he just lays people out. And then Simmons loops behind him. They do that so well. In fact, there was a play, and it was not a sack. I thought it was an unbelievable play. It was actually a 3rd and 18 play late in the third quarter, Buck, where they ran a TT stunt. But because it was 3rd and 18, the Raiders chose to throw a screen to Bolden. And Simmons was the looper, but he read the screen immediately, and he ran down Bolden outside the numbers. I thought that was an unbelievable play by Simmons.
Now, we were watching that in the press box, and we're kind of, you know, there was a question. Who was that defender? Was that Jeff that just ran him down that way? But Autry, I mean, he's not – Danico Autry is not a man of many words, but he knows – he sure as hell knows
that. Well, I'll tell you what, when he's the penetrator and he goes after the center or a guard to, yeah, you know, to be the first guy through in the TT stunt, he lays people out now. I mean, he's not out there to make friends.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, there is certainly no love lost between the Titans and the Colts. Obviously, the next opponent up on the schedule. Tom Pelissero just tweeted that Jonathan Taylor did not practice today, but apparently it's just precautionary after their win at home against the Chiefs. So, Greg, I just had the opportunity to watch the Chiefs-Colts game yesterday, and I came away feeling, one, that front for Indy is playing really well, particularly against
really well.
But also that Kansas City left some opportunities in the same way that the Raiders left some opportunities on the board on Sunday. It felt like the Chiefs, it's rare you see Travis Kelce just drop a touchdown pass the way that he did.
Tough catch, but you're right. Normally, you know, he might catch that, but that was not a routine catch.
Fair enough. I think beyond – well, let's start with the defensive front of the Colts, because they've been incredible against the run all year long, but I thought it showed up well in this game in particular.
Yeah, I would say that they're a front four-based defense, and I think that that's kind of who they are. They're able to generate relatively consistent pressure with their down four. So in the secondary, they are able to do they're able to play with seven. They're not a high-percentage blitz defense, although I will say this. If they get you in third and long, their pressure percentage does increase. So they're really more of a third down pressure defense on occasion than they are just, hey, this team comes after you. They're not really built that way. They rely on their front four, and as you know, it's very, very good. They play more single high safety than split safety. They mix in some split safety. Gus Bradley's there now. He's been doing that more the last couple of years because pretty much everybody mixes in more split safety now. But
they're not working with the Legion of Boom anymore.
No. But I thought that this past week in particular against a really well-schemed pass game that they played really well in the secondary with their what I would call zone match principles. They did an excellent job recognizing routes, matching routes, carrying routes, then delivering to another defender. I thought they played zone match coverage at a really high level this past week. We're seeing a lot more teams because they're doing it more, just getting better and better at it. So this is not an easy defense to throw the ball against. The big question is the run game, because I'm going to be honest with you. I thought that while the Titans had moments on tape of running the ball better, I thought overall they did not necessarily run the ball better. There were just a couple of longer plays. And when I say longer, I don't mean, 30 yarders. Obviously there was a 24 yarder. There might've been another 10 plus yarder, but I didn't get the sense that they were controlling the game running the ball.
No, I mean, the second half bore that out, I felt like. And I think, Greg, from the Giants game to this game, for the Titans and for Derrick Henry anyway, I think the coaching staff was more pleased with the way that he kind of took advantage of some stuff that may have been open or some lanes that may have been open for him in the Giants game that he didn't necessarily hit the way that they are accustomed to Derrick hitting.
You know, I think that in an ideal world, when they're ahead like they were ahead in the second half, they want to be able to hand the ball to Derrick Henry and have him, carry them home. We've seen that in the past. And then you have to look. I know that I'm sure a lot of fans think, oh, my God, what's going on in the second half? You know, to me, there's no overriding theme, Buck. You have to look at plays. And so let's look at this past game. You know, they had a drive where they got to a third and one. Okay, and then so they hand the ball to Henry. That's right. Wouldn't look, a few weeks ago they gave it to Chig and everybody was up in arms. Why don't you give it to Henry?
Loss of three.
They gave it to Henry, and the left tackle Daly missed his block on Nichols, and the right tackle Petit Frere missed his block on Crosby. So, those things happen. So they gave it to Henry, what everybody said they should do, and they lost three. And then the next play was a really – I'd be curious your thought on that play. The fourth and four, ultimately Jones beat the left tackle Daly to the outside, and Tannehill kind of threw it behind Burks. Yeah. Did you think his throw was impacted, or do you think he just threw it behind him?
I felt the throw was impacted, and, you know, Traylon tried to make like a weird adjustment. He kind of like hopped to
get... Well, he jumped because he wanted to slow himself down. If he just kept running, he wouldn't, you know, he just would have run through and the ball would have been way behind him. So I think he jumped to slow himself down.
I've watched that play a handful of times because obviously it's been a big discussion point. I felt like the throw was impacted on that particular play, but I don't know if
you... I did too, and I probably watched the play 10 times, and I came away believing that there was some impact on the throw because basically that's a pitch and catch throw.
Yeah.
And, you know, one could argue, oh, you know, he got his hands on the ball, but that was a tough catch. That was not a routine catch.
Let's see. Something different for dinner. Searching restaurants near me.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Gee, same old, same old.
Wait, we're right here, ma'am. Our restaurant's just a few blocks from you. Why is she not seeing us?
Back to the usual, I guess.
Ma'am, can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local restaurants. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at CumulusBoost.com.
Right. It's things like that that I think, you know, just... And fans do what fans do, right? That's fine. That's why we're...
Oh, no, no. I'm not ripping fans. I was asking, you know...
No. I'm saying in terms of, Greg, just like looking at the drives in the second half specifically, because what you're doing for people, I think, is articulating each individual drive had a different result, and there's reasons why X didn't go right when they were executing fine in the first half, right? I think that's all.
Yeah,
that's all.
I mean, for instance... The first play of the very next possession, because obviously fourth and four, you're giving the ball up. So they get the ball back. Next possession, Tannehill has Burks wide open on the timing speed out, and he didn't turn it loose. And only Brian Tannehill can tell you why he didn't. It would have been an 8-9 yard gain on first down, and it sets you up beautifully for your next drive. Because, you know, if you're second and one or second and two, you feel pretty good about your play calling options. But I would say, in the outside zone run game, which is their staple, I thought there were times that the backside blocks in the outside zone game, that's where they struggled at times. Because there were a number of outside zone runs where the front side might have been a little cluttered, but how many times in the past number of years have we seen Derek cut that back?
Oh, a million.
A million, yeah. And this time those cutback opportunities were not there because the backside blocks were not made the way they're coached to be made.
Yeah.
And you hope they're made. So, you know, they couldn't put this game away with their run game, which is, I think, what they would ultimately like to do if they get a lead, you know, late in third quarter, early fourth quarter, and particularly a lead of more than one score.
Now, theoretically, that's what they're built to do with Derek on the roster. As far as we'll see what they do with their offensive line this week, because LaRaven Clark, they just signed off the Eagles practice squad to kind of, I think, either, you know, give somebody else a shot at tackle or at least have some improved depth there. But that's
right.
A conversation for another day.
They also played against two great defensive ends. And I would say both Daly and Petit Frere, you know, had some rough snaps, which I think you would expect given who they were playing against. I don't think that's a surprise.
No, Joe. And that's, it's not just that they're, you know, it's not that they're just great pass rushers. Like, those two play the run really, really well.
Crosby always stands out with the way in which he plays, taking nothing away from Jones, sure, who I've loved for years. I loved him since he came out of Syracuse, but Crosby plays 100 miles an hour on every play.
Yeah, though those dudes, that was the first time I've seen Max Crosby.
One player I want to mention before you probably want to ask me about something else, maybe Jacksonville or, you know, but I think that Hilliard needs to be a continuing factor as the third down back because he brings some juice to the offense. And, you know, something as simple as that 30-yard reception when it's 3rd and 9 deep in their own territory, when the defense is basically giving them a 5-yard throw and he turns it into a 30-yard gain. We saw him, you know, I guess it was week 1, was it, with a touchdown? I mean, he...
Who?
Was it week 2?
Yeah, well, no, 2 touchdowns. He's their leading...
Oh, two. Yeah. I mean, I think as a third down back, he gives them some juice, and I think they need that juice.
No, well, we talked about team speed, juice, whatever you want to call it, from somewhere. Yeah, that 30-yard catch and run, it just felt like they...
And that was a big play in the game because they were on their own 3-yard line.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it just gives them more options. They did some things with Hassan Haskins and Derrick Henry in the backfield. They ended up just being Derrick runs, but we'll see what kind of wrinkles they continue to add.
Well, they tried it on the first series, they done the first series, they went with the pony package, and the play did not work.
Yeah, so we'll see how they kind of integrate more of those looks into what they want to do. Greg, though, I want to, before we jump to maybe another game, I think the Colts on offense has been a big question for a lot of people around the league. You know, predictions and things like that don't matter, but you know, offensive line being this poor, or you know, having this poor of a start, has really affected what they want to do concretely. Now they got a penalty in their favor with Chris Jones apparently saying something nasty to Matt Ryan that helped.
Yeah, but right after a blitz that I'm going to break down on the matchup show, talking about the Chiefs defense, because it was an amazing concept. But anyway, their O-line has been a huge problem, and Matt Ryan needs a good O-line. You know, he's a quarterback that is a pocket player and a strider. Yeah. So he needs space, and if he doesn't have space, or he feels as if that space is being squeezed, he can't function at a necessary enough level. And he's clearly not comfortable with his receivers yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jacksonville, he just flat didn't have them, and it's, right. It seems he's working through these things with, you know, it's a new system. It's rare. I guess I didn't expect him to look like he's fumbling a lot, Greg. You know, yeah. It's weird.
He's under too much duress.
Yeah.
And he's not that kind of quarterback. You know, he's been a great player in his career. That's not the point. He's probably a notch below a Hall of Famer. And if they happen to win that Super Bowl that they lost when they were up 28-3, he'd probably be talked about as a meaningful Hall of Fame player. But so he's a really good player. But I think at this stage in his career, you know, he's always been a strider. He's always been, for the most part, a pocket player. But when the pocket is continually being squeezed on him, he has a tough time. And that's, we knew they'd have O-line issues going into the season. They probably knew that too. But it's probably just been a little worse than they had hoped.
Certainly. And, you know, I think for the most part, everybody's the walking wounded right now, it seems, across the NFL. I just saw the Chargers injury report. It looks like they're going to be struggling for some numbers throughout the course of this thing. But I thought that what they did to get Jelani Woods involved in the red zone, Greg, was something that we have not yet seen, but something, an example of something that they've kind of been working up to get the rookie tight end involved in a big spot when they need points.
Yeah, that was, and I loved him coming out. You know, he's a guy that he's really big. He's athletic. I like Woods. And look, I think in the red zone, he'll be a factor, but I think he can be a factor on third down as well in the middle of the field. That's a big body, a very, very big body.
It's like, is he 6'7"?
He's 6'7". He's probably 260.
Yeah. No, he's him and Mo Alie-Cox together. I really like that group.
Yeah.
That the Colts have. Greg, you told me that that one of the shows, or one of the games that was going to be on the matchup show last week, was Jags and Chargers. And you know, Justin Herbert obviously injured, and they lose Rashawn Slater throughout the course of this game. Joey Bosa is now on IR. But what the Jags were able to do to the Chargers, I think, kind of shocked everybody until they went back and watched it.
You know, the thing is people just assume the Jags are bad because they've been bad. But this team has now built up some talent. They are a fast defense. They've got great speed with their two linebackers in the rookie Devin Lloyd and in Foy Aluakun, who's probably not a lot of people are aware of him, but he's really a good player. And I'm telling you what, on that defensive front, they've got long, athletic bodies, okay? They've got the rookie Trayvon Walker. They've got Arden Key, who they signed from the 49ers, who can play end or tackle. They've got Josh Allen, who's a really good edge player. They've got a bunch of guys inside, Ray Robertson Harris. People probably don't know about him. He's a really good player. They've got Hamilton, number 52. I mean, they've got Smoot, who's also 6'3 and 270. This is a really good front. They've got an improving secondary, Tyson Campbell in his second year, a second-round pick out of Georgia. You know, this is – and the most important point to wrap up here is you can really see incrementally, obviously it's not going to happen overnight, and there'll be bumps in the road, but you can incrementally see the impact of Doug Peterson on Trevor Lawrence. Quicker feet on his drop and set, less of a strider, quicker delivery. Everything is happening a little faster in a good way. You know, when I say in a good way, I don't mean he's not playing fast or hurried, but he needed to be quicker. He was too deliberate.
Yeah.
And you can see that. As I said, that won't happen on every snap because it takes time for that to be totally ingrained, Buck. But it's, you can see it. So this is not a, you know, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're a 12-5 team. You know, I don't do that, and there's no way to know any of that stuff. But this is not an easy out.
They're a competent football team. They're a competent football team.
Correct. And you know, and if their O-line can come together and they can, you know, keep Trevor secure in the pocket, they've got weapons. The way they're using Kirk not quite like Deebo Samuel, because he's not carrying the football, but they're moving him around a lot.
Yeah. No, I've certainly enjoyed watching the Jags through the first couple of weeks so far, Greg. I'm looking forward to those games. We don't see the Jags around here until December.
Wow.
First of those games. So those are really going to come down to the wire, especially if the Titans and Colts handle business, because those games are done before October 23rd.
By then, the Jags will what, be 11-12-1?
You heard it here first, folks.
Right.
Down on the install. Greg Cottrell, record prediction. Greg, the NFL matchup show. I know there's a lot of fun games on the schedule this week. I know you guys aren't going to get to do Dolphins Bengals, but I'm looking forward to.
No, but we are going to do Titans Colts.
Okay, so Titans Colts did make the.
And I think Darius is going to take a look at Derrick Henry. So that's in the show this week. So Darius Butler will be taking a look at that in the show.
Absolutely. What else are you working on for the matchup show this week?
For this week, let's see. You know, believe it or not, you know, look, I'm not denigrating any games, but sometimes we say, boy, that's not a great matchup. Because for us, so much has to do with what we can show really well. You know, I mean, like, we don't just say, oh, they have a great pass rush, so let's watch a guy beat a guy. Like, we won't, that's not what we show. You know what I mean? You know, so we're doing Rams Niners, which is Monday night. I guess Chiefs Bucks could well be moved because of the hurricane, but that's Sunday night football. I guess they're talking about that. They're probably going to have to move it because with the destruction that's going to occur, it's kind of hard to act like, oh, it's just another normal football game.
While everything in Tampa and Naples looks underwater right now.
Right, while people are you know, have to evacuate and can't be in their homes, and you can't just act like, oh, let's play some football. It's no big deal, you know. So, but that game will be played. It'll just be played somewhere else. I tell you, the two games that really intrigue me and that we're doing them are Bills at Ravens and Jaguars at Eagles.
What about the Jags and Eagles? I mean, other than those two teams are fun, we've talked about certainly the Jags a fair amount so far through the season.
The way we spoke about the Jags, and the Eagles are playing at a really high level offensively. And for people who are not following the Eagles and just remember them from a year ago, they've almost morphed into a passing team. Jalen Hurts has had more than 20-plus pass attempts, dropbacks, that's the best way to talk about it, in each of the two first halves in the last two games. So think about that. You know, you would never think about the Eagles and Jalen Hurts throwing the ball that much in the first half. But he's had, I think last week, he had like 27 or 28 dropbacks in the first half alone.
Yeah, especially if you watch them last season and that they were the top rushing team in the NFL. A lot of people hate watching the Eagles here in Tennessee just out of, I think, a little longing and envy for A.J. Brown.
A.J. Brown's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
Pretty good.
The NFL matchup show, set your DVRs, check it out on demand on ESPN+. It is such a great and valuable asset to help you understand more of what these coaches are doing and how the chess match occurs between coaching staff and coaching staff each and every week. And, of course, you can come hang out with Greg and I every Wednesday right here on the podcast. Greg, enjoy the football, and I'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Thanks, Buck. Appreciate it.